talking on all political subjects and taking on all callers, this is Matt Flynn Direct with your host, Matt Flynn.
Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar.
Welcome to Matt Flynn Direct, coming to you statewide in Madison, Waukesha, Wausau, Wisconsin Rapids on Civic Media. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. No subject is off limits. All points of view are welcome. And remember, you're not woke if you don't know history. You're not woke unless and until you know history. We're going right to the front lines of history in the making. A lot of it made last night. Very important primaries in Florida and New York. But before we get to them, an item jumped out at me, and this is symptomatic of our age. It's going to continue. Steve Bannon. He was the fixer, the sort of shadowy senior advisor to Donald Trump. Yesterday said publicly on a Medium outlet, quote, the FBI is a Gestapo. Merrick Garland, you're going to prison when we take over. Let me say that again, quote, the FBI is a Gestapo. Merrick Garland, you're going to prison when we take over. That's right out of the Third Reich. Let me tell you something. If you take a look at all at what the Gestapo was, that was a secret police, a terror group that would come to your house or apartment in the middle of the night, drag you out, torture you. For anybody in this country, much less somebody who'd been an advisor to a president, comparing the FBI to the Gestapo is not only false, and it's not only extremist, but it's toxic. And there's a descending layer of validity that people are giving to this. You have the Steve Bannon saying this stuff. Roger Frost says this kind of stuff. But then it gets down even to people whom you know in your community who are Republicans, maybe moderate Republicans, you know, maybe business leaders, who knows what they are. And they just recite and parrot things like, well, why did the FBI go in? Maybe there was no basis for it, other than nuclear code stolen and in danger of being stolen or taken by the Russians. Yeah, there's probably something wrong with the last election. We got to fit there was nothing wrong with the last election. This was a search warrant, an executed search warrant, and various prosecutor experts have been opining that the FBI should have been sent in a lot earlier. Trump sat on this stuff for well over a year in an unlocked storeroom off a pool area in a resort. You ever been to a resort, any kind of resort? Ever been to Las Vegas, one of those places? They have a swimming pool. People running around all the time carrying towels. Throw jacket on a guy that says staff. Walks back in here that was not locked. It was not even locked, no padlock. You walk in and nuclear documents, top secret, were kept there for well over a year. And the FBI finally went in after Trump's people lied and said they turned it all over. And they found many more boxes of it. And this clown Bannon is comparing the FBI to a Gestapo. Let me tell you something. In Germany, there was no Fourth Amendment against unreasonable searches and seizures. The Gestapo did not go to a federal judge, say, here's a 70-page affidavit, read it over, please sign this warrant. But if you don't sign it, of course, we won't go in. It's not only bad history and stupid history. It's not only a lie, but it's toxic. It's a drip of poison, and it's penetrating down. And then saying, Merrick Garland, you're going to prison. There was a Republican congressman in Buffalo who just lost his primary last night. We're going to talk about that later. Carl Paladino, who said that Merrick Garland should be executed. And then when he got a storm of criticism, he said, well, I'm speaking figuratively, whatever that means. You have to erase this kind of violent, false, and toxic dialogue from our politics. The last time it really happened to this extent was in 1860. That was when Abraham Lincoln was elected president. Much of the South refused to recognize him, came out and said he was illegitimate. The same stuff they're saying now. And he was faced with a dilemma. Country is splitting apart. Do you hold it together by military force? That was one of the most consequential decisions in our country's history. And fortunately, we had the right guy to do it, Abraham Lincoln. But now it's the same kind of talk, same kind of talk. And, you know, I'll tell you something. The this kind of talk, it's not alone. Yesterday, Donald Trump came out and called for 21 days of national prayer for him. You know, this is an ego that's as big as the sun. We believe in separation of church and state. We have no established religion. We pray, I pray. But that's my business and your business, and we're not going to get together collectively for 21 days and pray for Donald Trump. This is penetrating. It truly is penetrating. How do you combat it? Well, you're going to talk to a lot of folks, and none of them will say exactly that. I mean, no one's stupid enough to say what Steve Bannon said or even what Donald Trump said. But many of them will massage it a little bit. Many of them will say, well, yeah, there was probably something wrong with the last election. Yeah, the FBI probably shouldn't have gone in there. Well, how did they know there were nuclear secrets? Oh, when they got them, they were there? Well, but how did they know that? Well, why are you having this kind of discussion? Why are you having this kind of discussion? One piece of good news. Joe Biden had issued an executive order banning ghost guns. Now, what are ghost guns? Ghost guns are kits assembled. You can assemble a gun out of a kit and it has no serial number on it. Now, there's a federal requirement that you have serial numbers. And there's also, we have licensed gun dealers who do background checks. But the Republican Party has blocked any attempt to stop people who circumvent those rules. So here's some examples. There are gun shows. Guy will go to a parking lot sometime in the evening, stand there, and people show up and they buy whatever gun they want. No background checks. No background checks. They're mail order guns. You can order a kit right now anyway with no serial number on it. Why do you want a gun with no serial number on it? Why do you want a gun with no serial number on it? You're not going to buy a car with no number on it. Some people file them off. They're going to use the car in a crime. You know, in your phone, there's certain things you can't disable. You have an iPhone? It has a feature that can track it. And you can say, all right, I want to take that off and take it into a shop. Nobody will take it off. Well, Biden very reasonably came out with an executive order that said that ghost guns are now illegal. Those are kits with no serial numbers on them. You can sell guns by a kit, but it has to have a serial number on it. And you can sell a gun, unfortunately, in a parking lot at night, but it's got to have a serial number on it. The only people who go to great lengths not to have serial numbers on guns are people who intend to shoot somebody or to commit a crime and get away with it. There are other ways the Republicans have tried to block very, very modest reforms that are a real problem. One of the things proposed was that nobody under 21 could buy a semi-automatic weapon like an AR-15. Well, what does an 18 or 19-year-old need with a semi-automatic weapon if he can buy it when he's 21? The better choice, and I've said this before, is that AR-15s, AK-47s, semi-automatics that are more potent than machine guns, which have been outlawed since the 1930s, should be put on the list of military weapons that are not available. You don't get to buy nuclear weapons, chemical, biological, bazookas, handhold missile launchers. You know, you don't get to javelins. You don't get to do any of that, stingers. Machine guns. Well, a gun that's like a machine gun is a machine gun. A gun that's like a machine gun is a machine gun. Well, right now that's the fight is over line drawing. But even bump stocks, there you can buy a bump stock, or you could, that would convert your AK-47, AR-15 into a machine gun, basically. And the Republicans resisted that. Well, you can do a homemade bump stock. Bump stocks were finally outlawed. But this is the kind of stuff going on. Joe Biden took the bull by the horn and said, no, we're not going to have kits that you can get in the mail with no serial numbers on them. If there's a murder, and these are usually people who are murdered for hire, hitmen by them, we want you in jail. We do not want you to be able to buy one of these guns. You know, an 18-year-old, you heard all the foo-fra about that supposed great gun bill that Biden finally got passed. And it took a lot, and my hat's off to him. But all it did is for people under 21, you can have access to their juvenile arrest records. Before that, you couldn't even do that. 18-year-old guy goes in, he says, my birthday, I'm 18, give me an AR-15. And he has troubled eyes and, you know, that kind of, he could be frothing at the mouth. Guy sells it to him. I told you this anecdote a long time ago. This is a true story. A guy goes into a gun shop, says, do you have a gun with the bullet would pierce a limousine? And the guy laughed. He said, I got what you need. There is a sociopathological subset out there. And so an 18-year-old goes in, he buys an AR-15, and some of those people who did that in Buffalo, people who did it in Uvalde, might not necessarily have had a juvenile record. Not everybody has a juvenile record, who's mentally ill, who got jilted at the prom, who got bullied, that kind of thing. You should stop bullying in high school. What I would do is, frankly, people caught bullying, that's communicated to their colleges that they apply to, and it hurts their application. You got to hurt them somehow. But I'm just going off on this. I just want to say to Joe Biden, congratulations. There was a lot of litigation over this. A federal judge just came down with an order saying that Biden's executive order is good. Go ahead. Can't be stopped. And so we're going forward. But there are other all Republican lawsuits standing up for the right to get a mail order gun, an assembly kit with no serial number on it. We're going to a break. Lines are open. 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break.
Go tell that long-tongued liar, go and tell that midnight rider, tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut you down, tell him that God's gonna cut you down, tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. We're going to some of the primaries yesterday. Some of the primaries. The last couple of weeks have been primaries in 18 states, but two of the most consequential are Florida and New York. And I'll tell you something. They show a few directions. One of them is the various strengths of the candidates. Do we pick the best people to go against the Republicans in November? But secondly, which direction is the party going to? In which direction is the party headed? Let's start with Florida. Very, very consequential. The marquee primary in Florida was who is going to be the Democratic nominee for governor against Ron DeSantis. Now, Ron DeSantis is trying to come across as mini Trump, but a little slyer, a little less given to really, really provocative announcements. Although if you take a look at the substance of what he's saying, it's very provocative, but he doesn't say it with the same kind of cult of personality that Donald Trump has. So what were the choices? There were a couple of choices, there are a number of choices, but two in particular, the two front runners. Charlie Crist is a former governor. He's a Democratic member of Congress right now, but he's a former Republican governor. He was governor of Florida, Charlie Crist. And he was a Republican, but a moderate Republican. And when Trump started to attack John McCain was a good friend of Charlie Crist. He got so disgusted with the Republican Party, he became kind of like a Lincoln Republican, and then he switched over to Democrat. He changed the Democratic Party. Down there, you have to register. And then he ran for Congress. Well, he was a former governor and a good guy, And so he got elected, and now he's a Democratic member of Congress. His major opponent was Nikki Fried. Nikki Fried was the agriculture, is the agriculture commissioner. They have an agriculture commissioner elected down there. And Nikki Fried is a strong candidate and obviously would have taken the state in a different direction if she were to win, in the sense that she is a Democrat right from the get-go. This thing got very, very contentious. And ultimately, to cut out any of the mystery here, Charlie Crist won that primary 60% to 35%, almost two to one. And I don't think that's surprising if you take a look at it, And the reason is the, think about it. Charlie Crist is a former governor. Everybody in the state had seen him on a ballot. And yeah, they'd seen the agriculture commissioner, but you know, this guy had actually won. Now he's in Congress and simply far better known. The second thing, and this is really kind of strange, but it got negative in a weird way. So Nikki Fried attacked Charlie Crist, saying basically you're a Republican, you're a flip-flopper, okay. And but Nikki Fried, Charlie Crist attacked her as being insufficiently Democratic. And I'm thinking, well, you know, that takes a lot of chutzpah, guy. I mean, you know, you were the Republican governor, now you're a Democrat. Nikki Fried, when she was in college, believe it or not, and she's a liberal Democrat, very good person, be a great governor. Believe it or not, in college, one of her friends or the group of friends was Matt Gaetz. Matt Gaetz. Now, Matt Gaetz, nobody knew that he would be accused of trafficking minors in college. And, you know, when you're in college, it wasn't her good friend or best friend, but, you know, you have a group of people or in high school that you hang with. And this guy sort of hung with that group. I have a feeling Charlie Crist overstated it. But he's slamming Nikki Fried for even knowing Matt Gaetz in college. How bad is that? Now, you got to love politics. Actually, you don't. You really don't have to love politics. But anyway, Nikki Fried, you know, the overriding issue was you have a former governor who's a little older and now a member of Congress running as the agricultural commissioner. And Charlie Crist raised more money, and so he wins 60 to 35%. Now, here's the deal. On that particular race against Ron DeSantis, Crist is behind in the polls. That's not surprising, but he's behind in the polls by more than the margin of error. And I heard a news bite from him this morning, and not that he's going to listen to this advice or take this advice, but I think he's barking up the wrong tree. Let me tell you why I think that. One of his big deals is he says, quote, Ron DeSantis is really running for president. We all know that. He's running for president. He doesn't care about Florida. Now, if you look at this historically, in 1958, John F. Kennedy got elected to a second term in the Senate, and everybody knew he was running for president. He was campaigning for president even when he was campaigning for the Senate. And his opponent said, the Republican said, he's just wants to be president. People in Massachusetts were proud of that. They liked that. There are a lot of states that have never had a president. We haven't had any. Ohio has had the most, quite a few of them. So has Virginia. People are proud that their guy is being considered. They're proud. So you accuse Ron DeSantis of wanting to run for president. All you're doing is elevating his stature in Florida. This has got to get to Charlie Crist. That business of, oh, he just wants to be president. Well, that ain't chopped liver. That ain't hay. Being president ain't hay. So if he leaves and goes for president, they bask in the glory. It's like what he wants to do is win the Super Bowl. Well, yeah, he wants to win the Super Bowl. So do I. So do we all want to win the Super Bowl. Super Bowl. Val Demings won hers with 84% of the vote. She had a primary. But in the polls, she's beating Rubio 48-44. So there's good news in Florida. Val Demings right now is up more than the margin of error. Well, sort of the margin of error against Rubio. Chris is slightly behind the margin of error to DeSantis. And we have two very strong candidates in there. I'm delighted to see it. Florida, I think, is in good shape in the Democratic Party. We're going to a break. The lines are open. 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break.
Gonna suck it to me now. Ah!
Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. Big news out of New York, the New York primary. That one has produced a number of winners and losers. And there, the message isn't so much, can they beat the Republican in the general, these congressional candidates. There was a split primary in New York. There was a big mess in New York. I'm not going to get into it all, but a judge threw out a redistricting plan that the Democrats had put in on the grounds that he thought it was too much gerrymandering. This is a joke. There's no courts that threw out Wisconsin's Republican gerrymandering plan or Texas's Republican gerrymandering plan or Florida's Republican gerrymandering plan, but the courts in New York were so scrupulous they threw out the Democratic gerrymandering plan, and so they suddenly made a huge mess of it, and it was so complicated, the courts ruled that there would be two primaries. One primary would involve the gubernatorial and statewide candidates and state assembly and state senate candidates, and the other one would be federal races, for instance, for Congress. Now, Kathy Hochul, the incumbent Democratic governor, won her primary handily, and right now is favored over Lee Zeldin, the Republican nominee for governor. And but, you know, that occurred weeks ago, months ago. This is just Congress. Well, here's the biggest race, Jerry Nadler against Carolyn Maloney. Jerry Nadler won that one rather large with 81% of the vote counted, but I think it held up the same at the end, 56 to 25. And there's a third guy, a no-name, Suraj Patel. Suraj who? He got 18%. He came within 7 points of eclipsing Carolyn Maloney. Here's what happened, really. Both Carolyn Maloney and Jerry Nadler are roughly the same age. Maloney is 76, and Nadler is 75. They both are distinguished members of Congress. They both served for about 30 years. They both are quintessential Democrats. But Nadler has gotten a lot of TV time, basically in the impeachment hearings, basically on January 6th. Carolyn Maloney has gotten some too, but basically he's been all over television, at least more than she recently. And this was the upper part of Manhattan. You know, it used to be that he represented the western part of Manhattan and she the eastern part. Now they all got lumped together in one of the bluest districts in the country. Anyway, the guy wins. So whichever one of them won, we'd be in good hands. And they're not going to last forever. I mean, Jerry Nadler isn't the healthiest guy in the world, apparently. I don't know, according to some of the data out of the race. And Carolyn Maloney, is 76 now. So you're going to see some changes there eventually. But right now, it's going to be in solid hands. Jerry Nadler will win the general. Just a little farther north, Sean Patrick Maloney is the head of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. He's the guy that goes around the country helping to finance fellow Democrats around the country. And after this shuffling, he got stuck in a district that now is slightly more Republican, just slightly. He'll win the general. He beat a progressive candidate, Alessandra Biaggi, pretty handily. And this was a clash between the establishment wing of the Democratic Party and the so-called progressive wing. So Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton supported Sean Patrick Maloney. So did Nancy Pelosi. Alessandra Biaggi was supported by Bernie Sanders and AOC. and Sean Patrick Maloney. I mean, he's the head of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. Alessandra Biaggi, I think, is a state senator. I'm sure a fine person. Nobody really knew her. So you have what I would say more of an entrenched Democrat. And when I say entrenched Democrat, anybody else in their right mind would look on Jerry Nadler and Sean Patrick Maloney and say, these guys are far to the left. They are. They're much farther to the left than the Democratic Party was 50 years ago, 40 years ago. But they are not so far over on the left that they spill into the progressive caucus types. Then there was a race that was really a race. Patrick Ryan against Mark Molinaro. And this is a seat farther north that Biden only won by 1.5%. It had a Democratic congressman. The guy was picked as the new lieutenant governor after Hochul's prior lieutenant governor turned out to be a crook and is going to be or was criminally charged. And so is a vacant seat. This is a weird election because it only fills out a term till January. But then they have to run again. And it's further weird because Mark Molinaro, the Republican, ran for this seat for 4 or 5 months, and then he switched to another race next to it for the 2-year term starting in January. So it's a mess. In any event, let's cut the suspense here. Patrick Ryan, the Democrat, beat Mark Molinaro. And this is one that Biden, you know, barely won. And this is a year where he beat Trump pretty well, 7 million votes nationally. So for us to hold that congressional seat is a very, very, very good omen. Very, very good omen. In Lower Manhattan in Brooklyn, you have Dan Goldman winning. Now, this is the one that de Blasio, the former mayor, had entered. And then he dropped out. He realized he was in single digits. People were tired of Bill de Blasio. But there were a swarm of progressive candidates. Everybody came out of the woodwork. Literally everybody came out of the woodwork. And there were a ton of candidates. Dan Goldman is the guy you've seen, very experienced lawyer, prosecutor, and he's the one that prosecuted one of the impeachment trials. And you've seen him on MSNBC as a commentator. He's measured in any other district in the country, he would be considered to the left of the Democratic Party. In other words, solid. But the swarm of progressives that came in all went after him, and none of them would drop out to consolidate, and he won. He's going to win the general. That's if one of the bluest, if not bluest, districts in the country. And so you'll have Dan Goldman in there as an actual congressman. You'll have Jerry Nadler. You'll have Sean Patrick Maloney and Patrick Ryan. Solid, solid people. Very, very solid people. Very much in the mainstream of the present Democratic Party, which, whatever you may say from the left, is to the left of any historical indication of the Democratic Party. Up in Buffalo, thank God, there was a Republican in the primary named Carl Palladino, and there was another more normal Republican. Carl Palladino did two things that kind of chill your blood. One of them is he actually, in the campaign, praised Adolf Hitler. Here's what he said, quote, "Hitler is the kind of leader we need today," end quote. Yeah, right. Kill 6 million Jews. Devastate Europe, genocide people, the genocidal pervert and sadist, and this is what we need today. And he goes, oh, no, what I really meant by that, he was a strong administrator. You know, the guy's sick. Carl Palladino's very sick. He also said, and this is about 2 weeks ago, quote, Merrick Garland should be executed. You know, not put in prison like Steve Bannon. He should be executed. Storm, and he said, well, I was just, you know, you try to walk it back. I was just speaking figuratively. The man is sick, and these kinds of statements should not be stated by a prominent figure. And by prominent, I don't mean he's prominent morally. I simply mean because he's in the press because he's running. And you know something, Elise Stefanik, the number three in the Republican caucus, supported him on behalf of the Republican caucus, because the guy he was running against was a no name. And with all of this about Hitler and executing Merrick Garland, Palladino only lost by 3%. By 3%. You know, I think it's time, and this would be true in the Democratic Party, if a guy came out and said those kinds of things, everybody, if that happened in the Democratic Party, and it has happened with some people on the far left who are anti-Semitic, just like they are on the far right, Democratic Party gets together and repudiates it. They won't support them. Why? Elise Stefanik represents a far north district in New York, a rural district. You know, New York, you think of New York, New York City. New York is one of the biggest dairy producers in the country. I think just after California and Wisconsin, and I hope we're still number two. I don't know. New York's a lot bigger. New York's an amazing state. She represents a rural area, and it goes all the way up to the northern part of New York. So she's just north of the Buffalo district that Carl Palladino is running in. And the clown says these things, and Elise Stefanik, the number three, goes, well, you know, I'm sure he didn't mean that, you know, but, you know, he's a solid Republican. No, he's not a solid Republican. He's not a solid. Solid Republicans were Dwight Eisenhower. They were people like John McCain, like Lee Dreyfus, Tommy Thompson. I mean, even Ronald Reagan wouldn't say something like that. No, he's not a solid Republican. And the Republican Party is not stopping the toxicity and the cancer that has invaded their party. So what is the takeaway that I get from New York? We're just in great shape in the general election, no question about that. But more to the point, the direction of the Democratic Party is when you have extremes pulling your party, and sadly in the Republican Party, it's Trump and the Tea Party types and the Freedom Caucus types, they have yanked their party so far to the right that it's toxic. But in the Democratic Party, you have mainstream Democrats who are considered mainstream only in relationship to so-called progressives, but they would be considered far left in the history of the Democratic Party. And then you have the progressives. You have Bernie Sanders, you have Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and you have the Squad and this kind of thing. And in New York, down the line, the mainstream Democratic Party won. And I think that's very good. That's very good for our country, because the fact of the matter is that the function of an extreme part of a party is simply a corrective, and it's simply basically to have an influence on issues, but you don't want them running anything. Now, in Florida, there is a guy, Maxwell Frost. What a great name. I was thinking of Maxwell Smart, but it's Frost. 25 years old. Kid's 25 years old. He's a progressive. Ran against a mainstream Democrat who is, this is for a Val Demings seat, a blue seat. And this guy, the guy that was supported, the mainstream guy, was supported by everybody. Maxwell Frost is 25 years old. He just turned 25. In the Constitution, you have to be at least 25 to be in Congress, at least 30 to be in the Senate, and at least 35 to be president. And there's no age limit for the U.S. Supreme Court. You could be 13 years old, which obviously isn't going to happen. Frost goes out there, and here's his credentials. He worked for the ACLU, and he formed a gun group after Parkland, and he is just passionate about all those issues, and he just flat out said it. Now, if he had run in New York against Dan Goldman, if he'd run against Sean Patrick Maloney or Jerry Nadler, he would not have won. But in Florida, the guy he ran against, even though he was supported by the mainstream of the Democratic Party, was not as well known. And this guy had his convictions. He's young and eager. And think about that. Remember when you were 25? Maybe some of you aren't yet 25. I suspect most of you are, more than that. How great would that be? 25 years old, you go, I'm in Congress. I'm in Congress for 2 years. I'm going to go up there, and I'm full of passion. And I think that's great. So that's the kind of new blood I'd like to see come in. So there you have it, in Florida and in New York. Very, very strong signals for the Democratic Party. Val Demings ahead by the margin of error almost of Marco Rubio. Marco Rubio is saying stupid things. The lieutenant governor of Florida, remember there's a large Cuban population down there? She said, the lieutenant governor of Florida said that Cuban refugees should be bused to Delaware and dumped on Joe Biden's home state. You know, like Abbott and the guy in Arizona is busing refugees from the border to New York and Washington. This went over very poorly in Florida. It was dumber than hell. And so then DeSantis had to come out and say, well, what I meant was illegal refugees as opposed to refugees. And nobody bought it. I don't know. I think Val Demings, send her some money. Val Demings could win that one. And Charlie Crist, come on, guy. You're a former governor. Get in there and don't accuse DeSantis of running for governor. The locals are proud of that. Go after him for all the crazy stuff he's said and done. All the crazy stuff he said and done in time into Trump. We're going to a break. The lines are open. 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. Back to Matt Flynn, director. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. Bizarre lawsuit by Trump in Florida. I want to unpack this. You've read about it. I want you to understand what it was that occurred. There is a judge in Florida, federal, named Eileen Cannon. Eileen Cannon was appointed by Trump, rammed through by Moscow Mitch, and widely seen as extremely right-wing. Donald Trump, once the FBI executed the search warrant, he unleashed a storm of hatred against the magistrate judge who signed the warrant. But that case is presently pending before that judge. Trump came out with a crazy idea the other day, you probably read about it, saying he wants a special master to review the documents to see if they really are classified. Now, first of all, putting aside everything else, the notion of a special master, sometimes they're called referees, depending on the state, and I've been involved with a bunch of them. You know, judges have limited time. So if one party says, hey, the other party wants 10 million documents, and I think that's overbroad, the judge will say, okay, I'm going to appoint a special master or a referee. It's usually a retired judge or lawyer, very distinguished, very well regarded, very even-handed. He goes through it and he comes up and he issues a report and he says, judge, about a quarter of these documents are relevant, three quarters aren't, here's what I recommend, that kind of thing. And the judge always adopts it, always adopts it. But here, there are, you're talking about nuclear secrets, top secret, that are only supposed to be reviewed by very few people, and even not including the head of the CIA, and in a secure room. And when Eisenhower was president, they'd bring it in. He was the president. He'd go to the secure room and a guy with a briefcase that he was handcuffed to would come in and show the president and then he'd take it back. And the clown Trump passed this stuff around in the White House and simply took it to an unmarked storeroom off a pool in a resort for more than a year. So it's a crazy idea, but Trump's people, I think, overstepped themselves because it's frivolous. But they also started a new lawsuit to try to get around Reinhardt, who was the magistrate judge who signed the search warrant, and it was assigned to Eileen Cannon. Now, assignments in federal courts are random. They truly are. In other words, you're on a wheel, sort of, and they say there's six judges. They spin the wheel, and it goes to Jones. And the next case, spin the wheel, and it goes to Smith. And then until they all take a turn, and then it starts again. So she got it truly by random. And everybody in Trump world thought, great, you know, she's going to be grateful to Trump because she's right wing as hell anyway. And she would not have been a federal judge without Trump. Well, it turns out that she has a little more steel in her spine than anybody thought. This lawsuit, by the way, is not a lawsuit. It's a press release. It just boasts about Trump. Trump may have, I'm sure he edited it at least. It says, Trump is the clear front runner in 2024. And they put that in what? A complaint against the government? So she looks at it and she says, it is puzzling why a new lawsuit is filed when there's an existing federal judge overseeing this as it stands. If you don't like your judge in federal court, you don't get to substitute him. You do in state court in Wisconsin under some circumstances, but most states you don't, and you certainly don't in federal court. And if you don't like him, you don't just start another lawsuit attacking him. saying you're the front runner in 2024 and you want the new judge to do something to help you. That's frivolous. I would assign attorney's fees against Trump's lawyers for filing this thing. In any event, here's what she said, Eileen Cannon. She's actually acting like a good federal judge. Maybe she will be a good federal judge. She said, Trump has until Friday, that would be 2 days from now, to explain to the court why a separate case like this is required. Why not just submit this request to Judge Reinhardt, who is overseeing the case? And then there's a very, very short time for the government to respond. And then the second thing is she wants explain why you think that your motion should be granted to have a special master to determine executive privilege. That's what they're saying. There's executive privilege. He can take nuclear documents because he was president at one time. Now, remember something. Joe Biden is there's only one president at a time. You do not have two executive privileges. Joe Biden has said, I have executive privilege. And if there is any executive privilege claim, I waive it for any of these documents. And the U.S. Supreme Court and the courts of appeals have all said there's only one president, that's Joe Biden. So you have a clown with nuclear, and some of them are truly top secret nuclear documents that should only be reviewed with a guy with a handcuff to a briefcase comes into a secure room and the president has to leave the White House to go look at them. And they're in a towel locker or something at a resort or near, a storeroom of some sort. Maybe they have paper cups in there. Who knows what they have in there? It's crazy, absolutely crazy. So I got to say, tip a hat to Eileen Cannon. Many, many people thought, believe me, when that thing was filed the other day, he found a surefire way to scam the system. He doesn't like the federal judge he has. You don't have a right to substitute him. You start another case attacking that federal judge, saying you're the front runner and wanting one of your appointees to go, I'm going to appoint a special master. Hey, how about Rudy Giuliani? He'd be a great special master. And he's going to go through these. He has no security clearance. Now, they're not going to get Rudy Giuliani, but even if they got, this is absurd. This is absurd. This is not a normal thing. You've got to understand, Trump is using appeals to delay. They always use appeals to delay. Lindsey Graham is using appeals to delay. Rudy Giuliani is using appeals to delay. Delay in the end can impact justice. Shakespeare has in his to be or not to be speech in Hamlet, to be or not to be, that is the question, whether 'tis better to bear the slings of arrows of outrageous fortune. And one of the things that he has in there, the law's delay. He has those words, the law's delay. Some people thought, even though he never went beyond a good grade school education, that he'd work as a clerk in a law office for a while. The law's delay. Dickens has a novel, Jardyce versus Jardyce, where a lawsuit lasts several generations. It's willed in a will by a lawyer to his grandson, who's a lawyer. Delay is the defendant's dream, and that's what Trump is doing. And fortunately, Eileen Cannon, to my amazement, but I don't know why I should have been amazed. I mean, good for her, stealing her spine. She said, you have till Friday to say why you start a new lawsuit asking for something you should have asked the other judge for in the lawsuit that it was assigned to. And secondly, what do you mean executive privilege? So stand by. That's the background. We're going to a break. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after.